Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, quick trigger warning. This episode does contain discussion of suicide and our usual filthy language. Charles is like, what are you not understanding? I'm lying in bed reading Thoreau. You want me to get into a fucking boxing ring and punch somebody? No. Hi and welcome to Gen X, This Is Why, the podcast where we re-examine the sometimes bizarre and often scarring media of our shared childhood. My name is Amy and I'm a proud Gen Xer born in 1977.
And I'm her sister Jenny, born in 1974.
Morning, Jen.
It's not morning. I've been up since jackhammers woke me up at 7 a.m.
Oh, Lafayette Beetle woke me up at 6:45.
Wow. I didn't bring the jackhammers into my house.
That's you didn't hire the jackhammers?
No, they're not mine. I had no control over that.
I texted Jenny last night and told her Timmy accidentally called Arlo Lafayette.
Accidentally.
Really? All right, Jen, just some housekeeping this morning. The memes really liked our April Fool's Day joke. I know that was a few weeks ago, but we record 3 weeks ahead. So we're actually recording this on April 2nd.
Yep. And they were totally fooled, or they thought they were having some kind of weird hallucination.
When I told Timmy what we were doing, he's like, you know, it seems realistic. I think people will buy it. I'm like, not our memes.
They're all over it. They just saw the description. They're like, what's going on?
This isn't happening. Doc Baker does not have family. He does not belong to anyone. So today we're going to finish our look at Little House.
Oh, wait a minute. I have some housekeeping.
Oh, Jenny is housekeeping. Okay.
So a couple weeks ago, I don't know when it actually happened in reality, people heard Dead Poets Society.
Yes.
I would like to say that Amy was wrong about a Shakespeare reference. And I knew it because I listened to it again last night. I listened to it and I'm like, I think she's wrong about that.
I can edit that shit out. Nobody's going to hear it. Go on.
I have a copy of it. I'll just put that copy up. So, Amy was talking about how 10 Things I Hate About You was from Othello. It's Taming of the Shrew, which
it is Taming of the Shrew. Yes. You're right. No, wait.
I was like, oh, I think it's Taming of the Shrew, but I'm like, Amy must know this. Hold I'm not going to question hold on. Her.
In my defense,
okay,
there is one that came out around the same time called Oh, and that's based on Othello, and it's teenagers.
But you made me doubt myself.
No, it is Taming of the Shrew.
Of course I was right, because it was Shakespeare. Right.
However, if you want to see the best version of Taming of the Shrew, you need to watch the one with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. Mm-hmm. It was like during their tumultuous breakup, get back together. It was so good.
But I just wanted to state that Amy was wrong about
Shakespeare. I was wrong. All right, Jenny, are we ready? So today we're going to continue our look at Little House on the Prairie with Season 4, Episode 10, The Fighter.
The description reads, 14 years after being abandoned by his wife and son, a famous boxer named Joe Kagan passes through Walnut Grove. When a fighting match goes horribly wrong, Doc Baker and the townspeople learn that the ailing man who sacrificed his family for his career will only survive if he agrees to never enter the boxing ring again.
Jenny, I thought this was going to be racist.
I mean...
And it was a little
borderline.
Bit.
But it was actually a really good episode.
It was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
No, it was actually a good episode. Like, it was deep.
It was kind of deep. I agree. I do not agree with the ending.
I forget the ending.
Don't agree with it, as usual. But
okay. So did you rewrite this whole
episode? I didn't, because it was an hour and a half, guys.
I know. Thank God you warned me, because I was going to go waltzing into my bedroom at like 11 o'clock and bang out 45 minutes and go to bed.
Yeah, no, it was an hour and 20 minutes. So like I was tired after taking notes on this bitch. Okay. We open on Fighter Joe Kagan's room in Carson City, 1865.
So this is right at the end of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote, Joe Kagan is a black dude, so this is probably going to get really racist.
Can I just say, directed by Michael Landon, written by Amy Archer. I mean, Michael Landon. It says that Michael Landon wrote the teleplay.
Oh.
Thoughts what on that? That I don't know. What does that mean? I'm asking.
Well, that's like a fictionalized version, or a somebody else wrote the script and he wrote it for television.
Okay.
Okay. Hmm, interesting. So
there was some other name up. That must have been the person that wrote the script.
I wonder if this was based on a play.
Yeah, because it's too good, right? Like, it's good.
And it feels like it could be done in two or three sets, which is normally, yeah.
Yep.
You're right. It could have been a play. That first, like, I even have a note here. I have the first... I said I want to talk about the set direction here. It's very much set up like a school play. Like how they show us Carson City is just a window with old-timey piano music.
Yep.
It just reminds me of a play. I don't know why.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I could totally see that.
Okay. So, Jen, Joe's family, notably his wife, refuses to go see his match. We're getting
You know who his wife is?
No.
Hester Sue.
Is it Hester Sue?
Because it's the same actress that later plays Hester Sue.
He becomes good friends with Hester Sue later.
I know, which is super weird that this person's playing his original wife.
Well, we know they do that.
It's Ketty Lester. She later played Hester Sue. She's a great actress.
She's great, yeah. His son is really cute and his son's name is Tim, and asks to stay up and wait for him. But he gets home late that night and he's in really bad shape. He's like beat up, he's slurring. And he's telling his wife he doesn't know why, but he lost it and it just wasn't his night. Jen, it's bad.
It's bad. She's pissed.
Joe is suffering from brain damage and his wife challenges him to read the Bible like he used to. And he does, but like he struggles. And my closed captioning used the adverb haltingly. Haltingly reads the Bible. What?
Whoa.
I was impressed. And he's like slurring and sobbing. And I wrote, I hope I can find humor in this episode somewhere because this is not funny.
This is not. It was like the scene was intense.
Mm-hmm. It really was. Joe says he's doing the only thing he knows how to do. And his wife gives him an ultimatum. Look for a real job or I'm leaving. He's like, well, I guess you're leaving.
Wow. So I was not expecting that.
So she's taking the boy and they're going to Chicago in the morning. Okay. Then, Jen, we get a time jump of 15 years.
14 years.
It says 15 years later.
It's 14 years later.
It says that?
Yeah. Did your closed captioning lie to you?
You're right. It's 14 years. I see it. You're right. I just saw it in a summary. 14. Why would you do 14 years later?
Because maybe that's what it was.
God.
I hate Does that. Everything have to be like rounded off to fives? We're talking about years of people's lives. So it's 1879.
So, Jenny, if we're rounding everything to five, you'd be 50.
No. Do you know how rounding works?
After July, you would turn to 50. You would be 50.
No, I'd be 45. We're rounding to fives.
Okay. In December, you would be 50.
No, still not.
Yes.
The middle of the next year.
Whatever. Okay. Now we get a time jump of 14 years, and Nels is hanging a flyer outside his store that says Joe Kagan versus all comers, $5. The kids are getting out of school, and Laura and Garvey run up to him.
It's $50.
No, it's $50 if you win.
Do they have the purse on there? It's $5.
$5 to enter, $50 to win. So Laura and Garvey run up to Nels, and they're like, what's going on here? And he tells them if you last one 3-minute round, you win $50.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
That would be equivalent of like $1,250 today.
Oh. Laura's interested and she's thinking of entering Paw. Jen?
Paw's not going to have this.
He is a lover, not a fighter.
Well, and he's smart to not fight a boxer.
Yeah. And okay. So then Andy Garvey's like, My paw is the strongest man in all of Walnut Grove. And Laura's like, no, my paw is. And Garvey goes, my paw is way bigger. Burn!
Like, doesn't Laura say something like, my paw is the strongest small person?
The strongest smaller person. Mimi's, I have this on tape because it's hilarious. I will put it in the Mimi Bees.
Well, so, two things though. Size doesn't equal might necessarily.
Correct.
And of course, Jonathan's dumb enough to fight this guy.
Of course he is. Yeah. So Nellie happens to come across them and she's like, a horse is stronger than both your paws.
Yes, that's true.
And smarter.
All right, Jonathan, yeah.
And I'm like, Nellie, what do you think? Joe Kagan's going to fight a horse?
No, a horse is stronger than human. Yes, that is true.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So then Laura says she wishes they were offering $50 to punch Nellie in the face.
Yeah.
A better comeback there would have been, I would pay $50 to punch you in the face. Yep.
Yes.
That would be a better comeback.
They ruin, these kids ruin everything.
Yeah. Laura, you need to get the younger sister down, stuff down, you know?
Yeah.
So Nellie says the Ingalls can use the money, so Pa should enter. Oh my God.
Bro, she's such a bitch. God.
And then Jenny, I put, does this mean Pa will be shirtless? Will I see him shirtless in this episode? Spoiler
alert. The answer is no.
No.
Because he boxes in his farm outfit.
Nellie says Nels could win. He boxed in college.
Oh, no.
But he won't enter, Jen, because they don't need the money.
Oh, no. So I have an index card.
On Nels?
Again, no. Not on Nels. I'm not doing index cards on Nels.
When do I get my index card on Nels?
I did one on the Olsons like a year ago.
I want one specifically on Nels.
So I didn't know where to drop this one, but since we're talking about Nels being a boxer, who invented boxing? So the earliest evidence of boxing, this is loosely defined as hand-to-hand combat for sport, right? Because we've always fought each other. I mean, that's been a thing.
Okay.
Dates back to 3000 BC in Egypt and Sumeria. We also see mentions of it in early Indian texts, Ramayana and the Rig Veda. So this is, boxing's been around for a long time. It was introduced to the ancient Olympic Games by the Greeks in the late 7th century. They used to use leather to bind your hands and forearms for protection. So this is obviously pre-glove.
Yikes.
But that's something you still do. So I took some boxing classes and you bind the wraps around because it actually like protects your hand. Like it protects your hand. Like if Jonathan had wraps on his hands, he wouldn't have broken it when he punched that thing. So later in Rome, the leather was exchanged for a glove with studded metal on it.
Whoa.
Because Romans. This caused Roman boxing matches of the era to end in the death of one contestant most of the time.
Yeah. So
they had to amp everything up.
Do I smell a feat?
No, you don't. Okay. Nope. No. Unless Lafayette Beatles boxing me.
I'm just going to cover Lafayette Beetle in metal studs and throw them at you.
With the fall of the Roman Empire, boxing came to an abrupt end. It's not like we got all peaceful and shit. We just started using weapons.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
As sport, to fight in sport. That was in...
So when did it reemerge?
The Roman Empire died. Are you getting... is this an interview? So the Roman Empire.
I have some viewer feedback here that they want more of me in your index card.
That's not what they said. That's totally not what they said. So that's around 395 AD. Boxing didn't resurface again until 1681 in England during the reign of Charles II. Mm. Do you remember him, Aim?
I do.
Do you remember who he is?
I do.
Who is he?
He's the guy from the song.
No. Oh. No.
No?
He is the brother of James II, who got dethroned, whose son, James III, fled to Europe, and whose son is Bonnie Prince Charles.
That's what I was talking about, Bonnie Prince Charles.
I tied my index card back to the monarchy again.
Very good.
And even back to Bonnie Prince Charles.
Very good. They're all fucking related. In all fairness, it's not hard to do.
They are literally all related.
Yes, it's not hard to do. Okay.
But it's tough to tie back to a specific monarch because you're talking about hundreds and thousands of years here. Amateur boxing officially began in 1880. And Olympic debut was in 1904 in St. Louis, but only USA contestants entered, so only USA won the medals.
Wow.
Women's boxing started in the Olympics in 2012, and I watched that, and it was fucking badass.
Nope. Nope.
Fucking badass.
We're going to have a staunch disagreement when we get to my index card.
Oh, no. What? You have an index card?
We already have a staunch card. We get to the Y when we get to the Y. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh my God, I'm like out of it today. All right, Jen. Nellie says Charles is scared to enter and the girls get into a fight. So that night we're at the Ingalls house and Laura's telling Charles all about this. And Caroline says Nellie is right. Or Charles says Nellie is right. He's a farmer, not a fighter. And then Carolyn corrects her grammar. Did you hear it?
I heard it.
I was here for that.
Okay. I'm glad you get off on that.
Yeah, I like it. Now we go to the Garveys, and Andy is telling his pa about
Nellie. Well, can we just talk about Charles? Like, Charles is basically like, I'm not an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm not going to box a dude who's been boxing for 20 years.
Charles is like, what are you not understanding? I'm lying in bed reading Thoreau. You want me to get into a fucking boxing ring and punch somebody? No. I make mad, passionate love to your mother. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I mean, Charles is no stranger to fighting, but he fights when he has to, not for sport.
That man is amazing, and there's no way he's going to participate in that.
He's just, Charles is not this stupid.
No. Mm-mm. So, Jen, did you pick up something at the Garveys?
How dumb Jonathan is and how he's going to fight this dude?
And how he's a bad actor?
Oh, he's a terrible actor.
But have
he's
you terrible. Picked up that they're drinking coffee?
I did, and I wrote in giant capital letters, was coffee not caffeinated then? Like, everyone drinks coffee at night. What is the fucking deal with that?
Guys, it's nighttime. Like, they send Andy to bed. It is dark nighttime. Out.
It's got to be, like, 9 o'clock.
And Alice is like, would you like more coffee? Like, I could see Charles, who works harder than anyone I know, drinking coffee at night and still being able to pass out. But Alice? Alice can drink coffee at night?
Were they just more worn out from their lives and they could fall asleep?
I think so.
Because, like, the reason I'm so obsessed with this is I want to be able to drink coffee all the time.
Me too.
I love it.
Me too.
But I could never drink it at night. I would be up until 6 a.m.
So Jonathan sees Alice working on the bills, and suddenly he's like, I think we could use that $50. And Alice is like, nope.
He asks Alice what she's doing. She says, I'm figuring.
And he's like, isn't that the mercantile bill? What are you figuring? It's one bill.
What are you
there.
Figuring?
What do you got to think about?
Yeah, exactly.
You either have it or you don't. From my experience, most often I don't.
And she's saying how coffee is 12 cents a pound.
Yeah. Yep. Then he says you could buy all the coffee in Minnesota with $50. Okay. So, Jen, I love when she's like, I don't want you getting hurt and I don't want you hurting other people. He's like, no one will get hurt. It's a boxing match.
Someone's going to get hurt.
That's the very definition
of it. The chances of somebody getting hurt is high. Oh, I like when he says, I fought for an hour for nothing.
That's true.
What's 3 minutes
for
a chance at $50?
Was he referencing, didn't he just get the shit kicked out of him?
Yeah, but that wasn't going on for an hour.
When was that?
That was when he got all pissy in the last episode and went to...
Oh, he went in the Mankato Saloon.
The high cost of being right.
Yes, yeah. When he's in the saloon. That was not
he's
an
gambling.
Hour.
And, he was being cheated.
And Charles had to come and save his ass then.
That was 8 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so then he's like, men like to fight. Men folk like to fight. Like, of course he gets, you know, all women folk don't understand us. And Alice is like, we don't even have the $5 to enter. And he pulls out hidden money. If I was Alice, I'd be like, I'm fucking sitting here figuring the bill.
I'm figuring, and you have a whole stash of cash.
So then we have dinner at the Olsons. And Nellie is trying to get Nels to fight. And Harriet says Nels was a champ in college. And I feel like Nels is lying.
I think he is too. Yes. It's clearly he said that. Yeah. Clearly it was a lie. And now he's like, oh shit.
Well, the best is he's like, I was a champ at college for 3 years. And Willie's like, I bet you there were a lot of small boys at your college.
Willie's an asshole.
Nels explains that boxing is a science, that it's about the speed of your hand and your feet. And then Nels demonstrates. And I wrote, he's actually convincing.
I wrote, Nels is going to die with that telegraphing haymaker punch.
Yeah.
He goes true. Like this.
Like, you could block that an hour before it gets to your face.
Now Harriet and the kids are like, you must do it because you put on this display.
Did you get Willie's, like, can you kick? I'm like, Willie's all Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
All right, Jen. So Nels is going to box a professional fighter. I'm going to give you a second or two to let that sink in.
I love how his family's talking him into it. Like, every other family's like, hell no, you're not doing it. Even Pa is like, hell no, I'm not doing it. And his family's literally talking him into it.
No. So a few days later, it's raining and we see Joe Kagan arrive in town. First, this sleazy manager gets off the train and he's like older. And Nels is like, okay, maybe I can handle this.
I can beat this guy with a cane.
He's like got a cane and stuff. And then Kagan comes off and he's like 6 feet tall and looks down at Nels.
And he looks gnarly.
So Jenny, Kagan must be staying at this hotel we keep hearing about.
I know, it's the hotel.
Mm-hmm. All hotels look the same, by the way. This hotel looks exactly like the hotel that he stays in later. Brass bed.
It was definitely the same set. Yeah, there's no question.
He's not in good shape. His vision is really blurry. He's not looking good. Like, he should not be in the ring. He's like Rocky at the end of Rocky IV.
Blurred vision, like, though,
after the Russian.
Actually could help you a little bit. Because what you do when you're fighting someone is, like, if you're paying too close attention to all the details of them, you can't react. You kind of blur your vision a little bit because then you can see movement more easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those of you still with us, Joe Kagan has a manager and the dude is pissed that he can't buy liquor. Wrong town.
Did you ever say that? What's with this hick town or something?
He said. Wrong town. Bunch of
hicks. I did not realize. And now, I guess now I do because Olson's doesn't sell it or seem that you can't. Not only is there no saloon, but you can't buy liquor.
Mm-mm. It's a dry town.
Wow. Dry town.
So Joe Kagan asks sleazy manager, who I have throughout my notes that he's sleazy manager. Sometimes I just call him sleazy.
Okay. I'm slimy manager.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I call him just sleazy. So he's like, did you send my family the money? And sleazy's like, I don't know why you keep trying to pay this child support. Like,
why would you support your family?
They walked out on you. And besides, your kid is like 20 now. And Joe Kagan's like, shut the fuck up.
All right. Do you know that the manager is 6'3"? So Kagan's huge.
He's huge.
Oh, well, it seems that way. I don't know if they have like shoes on them or. Did he borrow Charles's shoes?
The lifts. So sleazy manager tells him there's a few guys signing up for this fight. And one is named Garvey and he looks the toughest. So I think we'll put him first. Okay. At the Ingles, Charles is putting the girls to bed and Laura asks him again to fight. And I wrote, will she not understand the man is an intellectual and will not get in a boxing ring?
I wrote, Laura's super irritating again, and I'm so happy. Because she's back.
Laura says she wishes she was a boy so she could fight him. Okay.
Good.
In town, Charles shows up at the mill, and Garvey is upstairs punching feed bags, a la Rocky training style in the meatpacking pan.
Well, and Hansen says, check him out. He's in the athletic club. Hansen has lost complete control of the mill in this episode.
Guys, all of my fighting references will be from various Rocky movies since it's my only exposure to boxing.
Okay. Oh my God.
All right. So judging by the way he's punching Jen, he's going to lose.
This is horrifying. This is some kind of like half dance, half punch. Like, did Kevin Bacon teach him this? Like, what is going on? He's doing some kind of like cartoon fucking boxing.
It looks like... is it Joe Glass in Mike Tyson's Punch Out? The one who like comes up to you like this?
All right. It is horrifying.
It's horrifying. So Charles is building the boxing ring and he needs a favor from Garvey. I didn't really get what the favor was.
I don't know.
It was not consequential. It was inconsequential.
They're building this whole ring. What does this ring cost? Like, no one's making any money on this thing.
No. Charles is building the boxing ring and sleazy manager comes in and then Joe Kagan comes in and they meet. And Joe Kagan wants the ring smaller, but like it's already halfway built. So now like more time and labor, people.
Yeah, because the whole idea is the way this competition works is that they have to just survive in the ring for
right.
a minute.
So he needs them
so
close.
He wants them to not be able mm-hmm. to run from him.
Right. Right. Which Charles, spoiler alert, Charles does beautifully.
Yeah, because Kagan's not that fast at this time. So he wants to be close to them.
Cut back to Garvey and he's still punching around and then he punches the wall and breaks his hand.
Because his hand's not wrapped.
And Charles is like, you know what, dude, you're way better off.
Yeah, good for you. You're not fighting now.
Then they have another manufactured scene of their friendship where they are just trying to shove Garvey down our throat.
Yeah,
where he's like BFFs with Charles all of a sudden. He's like, dude, I have an idea. Why don't you do this for me? And I'll split it with you.
Because somehow Garvey says, you owe me.
Yeah, he. That's what I'm saying. We come back to this favor that I don't even know what it was.
Would Edwards ever be like, you owe me, Charles?
No,
million fucking years. Mm-mm. Edwards would be like, what can I do to help, Charles?
Yes. Edwards would be like, put me in that ring with a broken arm.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Edwards would fight this guy with a broken arm? Yes. No question. And he'd probably win.
There'd be a lot of wing sauce.
He's like, I'll just punch my left hand. I'm good.
Yep. So they get into this like tiff and Paul's like, no way. And Garvey's like, I would not have hurt myself if I was helping you. Whatever.
Well, I don't even know what that means because Garvey was doing his stupid cartoon punch when he hurt himself.
Yep. Then, Jen, Doc has an epic burn. He says, I was planning on taking the day off tomorrow, Charles. Guess I better stick around. And it's Saturday, good. So I'll have to charge you double.
Oh, wow. Man. Burn.
All right, it's the day.
But here's my thing. They could solve this problem in 5 minutes. Just, Charles, give Garvey $5.
Yep, done. Because that was, solved. I left that out. That was like a big thing that Garvey couldn't get his money back.
Yeah, he was out the $5. So if I were Charles, I'd be like, here's $5.
I'd give him $2.50.
Let's end this.
I'd give him $2.50. Let's just end
this. Whatever. I'd give him $5 if I had to pay to be out of this.
$5 is a lot of money then. For Charles having done nothing.
It's $125.
But Charles did nothing.
Would you pay $125 to not get into a boxing ring and get your face punched?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. There you go.
No, but I would just be like, dude, I don't owe you anything. Shut the fuck up. Goodbye. Okay. So it's the day of the fight, and Charles says he's too nervous to breathe. They're all sitting there. Nels is comatose.
Not Nels. Poor Nels.
Jonathan's like, where's Carolyn and the girls? And he's like, she took the girls down to the church to pray.
That's kind of funny.
Nels goes in first. One hit, out cold.
I just have to say, Nels, just pretend he's Harriet.
Yeah.
Out but cold. This, like, this is accurate. This mm-hmm. is a skilled, seasoned boxer. He's going to lay you out with one punch.
One punch.
Period.
But Jen, the best part of this is Harry gets pissed at him.
Because he gets pissed at
him. All right. So now we have Charles. Charles does a little better. He gets punched.
He gets punched at first.
He goes down. But
he takes it.
He gets back up. And then we
but
see
then,
Joe Kagan cannot see.
Yeah. Now he's like blind.
And then, Jen, Laura sneaks out of the church to watch. But Ma catches her and sends her back to church. But then Ma starts watching through the hole. Okay, I don't know why they're not allowed in there. Women probably are
they
not
allowed. They
are allowed,
but Carolyn was against it. No, because Harriet's in there.
Oh, that's
they're
true.
Against it. They're against it. Carolyn was against it, so she didn't want to seem like she was condoning this.
True. So then Charles kind of gets him like in a corner and just starts wailing on him.
Putting some rib punches in because the guy can't see and he's having some kind of episode.
Now you're going to ask me, I know you're thinking it, do I think this is hot? No, I don't.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Carolyn did.
Bestowing violence on somebody is never hot.
It's a sport.
Nope.
It's a sport.
Nope. Okay, so when
but Joe... we don't know. Like, Charles doesn't know that he's, like, right. ill. Because right. this guy was in his right state, he would have laid Charles out already.
He'd be dead. Yeah. When Joe Kagan goes down, Carolyn starts screeching. Everyone is freaking out.
Carolyn starts cheering.
Yes. Okay. What's the difference?
Screeching sounds like she's upset about it.
Oh, no. She's thrilled.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Jen, explain to me again, I have, why Charles owes Garvey any of this money.
He doesn't.
Charles won it. Now, why does he should
give... I just have to say, though, I want to say, no way, no way, bullshit, no way. This would be like your high school gym teacher wrestling Anderson Silva. Like, there's no way Charles would win this unless the guy was almost dead. Like,
could you give me a better reference? It would be like me winning a swim meet against Michael Phelps.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Basically.
All right.
Yeah.
There's a good chance of that happening.
So, like, this is bullshit.
But I don't understand why now he has to give Garvey the money.
He just gives Garvey his $5.
No,
I think.
They split it.
Oh, they split it?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
I'd be like, fuck you. Here's your $5,
I know,
Garvey.
I know. Okay, So suddenly Charles realizes like something's wrong with Joe Kagan and he yells for Doc Baker. I don't know why. Like, Charles, maybe he needs help carrying him
Charles
somewhere.
Took a punch on the chin, man.
Yes, he did. At Doc Baker's, Joe Kagan's like suspended on a tiny little table with the blanket over him.
Yeah, that was super weird.
And Baker says, Joe is stable, but only for now. And sleazy manager's like, what's wrong with him? And Baker goes at him.
Yes, he does.
Baker's like, I think you know the answer to that already. He should not be fighting.
I can tell he's been examined by other doctors. Aim. How does he know that?
I don't know.
How the hell do you know that?
Maybe they're going
was
for...
Was there like a stethoscope stuck in his head
this
or something?
This was
still?
Like the late 70s when we had some really bizarre TV shows. Maybe they were trying to get Doc Baker like a medium doctor spinoff.
How does he know he's been examined
like,
by the doctor?
I could touch you and tell you have broken ribs.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening here.
I don't know. So he's like, he should not be fighting. And he basically says like, he'll die if he fights again.
Yeah. He has definitely... blunt trauma, brain injuries, that sort of thing.
Yep. So they take him up to the hotel room and Baker tells Joe, like, stay in bed for 3 days and take that time to decide if you want to live or die.
Yeah.
I feel like this was me mid-pandemic. Just get in your bed and decide if you ever want to wake up again. Take 3 days. Lay in your
bed. Did you get the weird exit that Doc Baker made?
No.
It was, like, super awkward. It was, like, pause. And then he's just, like, well, I forget what the trainer's real name is. What is it?
Sleazy.
Moody.
Yeah.
Mr. Moody. Doc Baker. And then they just like leave. I was waiting for the good day.
All right. So when the men leave, Sleazy is being all mean to Joe Kagan, won't even get him water.
I know. And he's like packing.
Yeah. Then he packs up and he leaves. He's like, this is a town of hicks and I ain't no nurse.
He's like, the hicks will take good care of you.
They seem to like you.
He's not wrong.
So Joe Kagan's like, bye. All right. So Charles gets home and he's all guilt ridden, Jen, of course.
Nice job, Charles, beating up a sick guy.
Mm-hmm. Nice job, Charles, beating up a prize fighter.
He was like half dead.
Okay. So he goes to church with Carolyn and the kids. And I wrote, where's Nellie? Where's the resolution to her taunting? Where's the satisfaction?
Like Charles won.
Right. Where's Laura going like,
we never get that.
In your fucking face.
We never get that. We never get
that. That was not satisfying. All right. So after church, Charles catches up with Doc Baker, who's going to see Joe Kagan. And he's like, you know what? Carolyn and I talked about it. We decided we're going to give Joe the prize money. He needs it more than we do. Oh, God. They're so good. They're so moral. So he goes with, well, I feel better with him giving it to Joe Kagan than Jonathan Garvey.
Yeah, me too. Yep.
So he goes with Doc Baker to give him the money. And Jen, they find him collapsed with a noose hanging from the lamp in the middle of the room.
I'm like, did Amy rewrite this? Like this suddenly took a weird, bizarre, dramatic
just
turn.
Just got dark. I will say Charles busted the door down and that was kind of hot.
Well, and then I was questioning my sanity because I'm like, I think Joe Kagan's in the later seasons and I remember him as like really upbeat and happy. And I'm like, is it just the same actor in a different character later? It's not. That was Joe Kagan.
But he turns his life around with thanks to Charles, Jenny.
Well, God knows like they would do that. They would, because I knew it was the same actor.
They would do that. So they get Joe Kagan into bed and he seems okay. You know, Doc Baker just feels his chest. He's like, you're still breathing. Like, you're good.
You're good.
So Joe Kagan kicks everyone out. But Charles, who's guilt-ridden, wants to stay with him. And I wrote, why would you leave a dude? They didn't even take the noose with them. Why would you leave a dude who just tried to hang himself?
Okay. But of course, this is now about Charles.
Of course. So later... Joe Kagan comes to and begs Charles to leave and he won't. Now this gets weird. Because Charles
gets really weird.
Charles says he's staying with him and that's it. And he's staying with him for months if that's what it takes.
I get what Charles is trying to do here, but the whole tone of this is horrible.
Yeah, he's like, you're gonna listen to what I say. You're gonna do what I say. Maybe Charles is playing like the I just kicked your ass card.
I've seen him do this with Edwards. Like, I know you're stubborn and this is the only thing you understand. And I think that's what he's going for, it plays cringy.
So are you saying he has tunnel vision? Is what? His tunnel vision back when he had his tunnel vision when he was doing the, you're going to put explosives in that cave, period.
Maybe.
Maybe he has tunnel vision again.
But like he, I get, you know what I mean? He's like, I know you're a stubborn person mm-hmm. and this is how I'm going to deal with that. But it just, it's cringy. It reads cringy.
So Jenny, but there's like a passage of time and it looks like Charles is practically living with him. They're eating together. Like, where's his family?
Why doesn't Charles just bring him out to the farm?
Yes.
And like let him stay in the sod house and like take care of him there? I don't understand.
Right. Like he did Chris, let him stay in the sod house. Yeah, oh, because like he burned the sod house to the ground after Chris's dirty ass was living in it. Okay. So Joe Kagan is not liking this at all. And I wrote, neither am I, the viewer, because this shit is boring. Next, we see Joe Kagan now working at the mill and he seems better. So there's more time passing.
Yep.
He's actually enjoying Charles. The meals are getting better. One day, Charles comes out of the mill and cannot find him, starts to panic. He's in the outhouse and he's like, what? You thought I was going to jump? And they laugh over his suicide attempt.
Like, is he still on suicide watch, I guess?
I don't know. All right. So, Jenny, now we're in Chicago and we see Kagan's son is training to fight. And guess who's there? Sleazy manager.
Of course. What a slime ball.
And sleazy manager kind of buys him off of the owner of the gym.
Yeah, I don't even understand that.
Yeah. So his name is Tim Kagan, and he's a big dude, but he's got a big chip on his shoulder, too.
Yes.
And why is that chip on his shoulder? Because he says Joe Kagan ran out on them and said he would send money and never did.
And then his mother worked herself to death. Yeah. And slimy manager is the one who never sent the money.
Right. And I was like, dun, 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 slimy
what
manager.
What a fucking dick.
Wow. Yeah. So Tim Kagan is rightfully angry.
Yes,
at this huge perceived wrong that has shaped the trajectory of his life. Okay. More on that later. Back in Walnut Grove, Joe Kagan is complaining about how hard it is working a farm. And Charles is like, look. You're done, dude. You're done with this penance, which I don't know why it was a penance because I'm the one who hurt you. But you can now get on the stagecoach and you can leave anytime you want. Doc Baker says you're good, you know, whatever. And so he's like, well, come in and have dinner. So they go into Charles' house and they have dinner. And JK, Joe Kagan, says, you know what? I really like it here. Like, I haven't been this happy in 20 years. Walnut Grove's pretty good. Like, let's face it. Dude can't be drinking and running around and stuff. So he doesn't need a saloon.
No. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need a saloon. And he can't box. And Carolyn's found somebody who will eat the 35 pies she makes every week.
Yes, she did. I would eat the 35 pies she makes. Jen, can you make a pie?
Is that a challenge?
Yeah, let's have a pie off next time I'm with you.
Oh, I'm going to lose that. That's like me fighting a boxer.
Okay. All right. Let's have a boxing
match. Actually, I have a better chance fighting a boxer than winning a pie
competition. Let's have a boxing match.
Okay.
You would kick my ass. I'm not even going there.
I'm just going to punch you right in the face.
Because
first chance I get.
I, like Charles, am a lover, not a fighter.
Amy will be like, what do I?
Nope. I'll just wind Timmy up and send him in the boxing ring with you and my kids.
They'll be like Garvey. They'll be Garvey fisted. They'll do the Garvey fist.
No, my
kids
will be like the Widow Thurman, Laura and Mary version, like throwing shade at you, trying to kick your ass.
You had the opportunity to train your kids to be deadly fighters.
I'm not going to.
You had the opportunity.
I'm not going to. Okay. So, guys, the moral of the story here is Joe Kagan is staying. And he's literally going to buy a farm that Charles says, it's all ready to go, dude. They're just, you got to go to Mankato. You got to sign the paperwork. No, you have to go to Chicago.
No, Mankato.
Mankato?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of shit goes down in Mankato.
They're not taking a wagon to Chicago.
But then Tim Kagan gets there. So he comes to Mankato?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fight is in Mankato. Okay.
All right, so next.
Aim, it's the Hick Circuit. They're on the Hick Circuit.
They're on the Hick Circuit. Right. So next we see Joe Kagan and Charles riding over to the bank to close the deal on the land to Mankato. Charles and Joe Kagan start talking about Kagan's life, and he says he started fighting when he was 14. He was enslaved to a white man, and he fought for 10 years to earn his freedom. Charles asks if he likes it, and he said yes, because it was the only way he could hit a white man and not get hanged. And they laugh because slavery is funny. Ha ha ha. Wow.
Charles is like, this guy was literally a slave.
Right. Charles is like, ha ha ha, yeah, you're right. They would have hung you if you hit a white man.
Oh my god. Yeah. You were doing so well with this.
Yeah.
With this, handling all this, and then they do this.
Dude, all you had to do was not laugh there.
Yeah.
That's all you had to do. Not That's laugh. It. Okay. So they get to the town, Mankato, maybe? Yes. Okay.
It's Mankato.
So they get to Mankato, and Jen, Charles is parking the wagon.
Okay.
He drops Joe off at the bank, and he's like, I'm going to find a parking spot. I'll be right back.
Why? He have to stable the horses. Why is that strange?
I don't know. So he's going to ride around and look for a parking spot, a la me and Coney Island with my kids.
He's putting the horses in a stable.
Do you remember that trip to Coney Island when we tried to go over there for the day?
And literally there was not a single parking spot in that part of Brooklyn.
9,000 degrees. Amy automatically, my annoyance level automatically goes up 25% when I'm with Mom and Jenny, 50% when I'm with Mom, Jenny, and my kids, 75% when it's hot out, 100% when I'm driving around, can't find a parking spot. So they could literally bounce quarters off me. I was so tense. Needless to say, we went home. Okay.
We were staying out at Rockaway, so it was only like a 15-minute drive from there.
Yes. So Joe Kagan walks into the bank, and as he does, he walks past a poster for Tim Kagan's fight. He rips it down and heads over to the saloon where they're building the ring inside.
Because he knows it's Moody, because it says Moody Presents.
Yep. There we see Tim Kane and Sleazy. And Tim is giving an interview to a local
Kane?
Press.
Tim Kane and Sleazy? Tim Kane's going to box in this?
Wow, Tim Kane can't win shit. So no, he's not going to box in this. So Jen, Tim is giving an interview saying he started fighting to earn money because his father left him. Then says his mother died working to the bone in a laundry. Then he uses the N-word, and that's unfortunate. So he's
well,
angry.
He uses it, but he uses it in protest.
In a
protest context. And you can see the generational divide here is clear from someone who was, like, his father was a slave. His mother likely was too. Maybe she wasn't. I don't know. But that you could see the divide there, and he's angry as hell. Rightfully so.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
more willing to speak out about it.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. So Joe Kagan overhears this. Does he run up to him and correct the record? No.
No. Mm-mm. Nope.
Instead, he waits for Sleazy to walk outside and then grabs him and threatens his life and says he better drop Tim Kagan from his roster.
He wants him to stop boxing. Mm-hmm.
So then he tells Sleazy, you dump him tonight, never go near him anywhere again or I'll kill you, and I'll take care of getting him out of boxing.
Well,
in the ring with him.
Did you see? But he grabs him in an alley and pulls him into a room that is the same room. And I was super confused because it is the exact same set of his hotel room in Walnut Grove.
Of course,
I'm like, I don't even understand how that same light would be coming in if the entrance to this is in an alley. It was super weird.
Jen, don't even try.
That was so sloppy.
So Jenny, he's going to sign up to fight his own son under an assumed name. What could go wrong?
Well, because we noticed that Tim Kagan walked right past him and didn't recognize him. So he doesn't know him.
I mean, he hasn't seen that kid since he's he hasn't seen his father since he's like 6 or 7.
Yeah, I know.
So he's not.
Well, he probably has aged rapidly and his face is long.
Yeah.
But later I'll address this. But okay. He seems to not recognize him at this point.
So next, Joe Kagan heads over to the bank and Charles is like, Charles is me in this moment. Waiting on Jenny. And whatever. Where'd you go? And Joe Kagan's like, I just started wandering
around.
He's
like, I'm taking care of a fucking crisis is what he's doing.
No.
He's trying to save his son's life
He doesn't say that. He's like, I'm just wandering around. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but what is he really doing? He can't tell Charles because he's got the weight of the world on him.
And Charles is like, dude, the bank is closed now. Like, what did they give themselves? 10 minutes?
I don't know.
Okay. So Joe Kagan's like, look, dude, you just go home. I'll wait until the bank opens tomorrow and head back.
And can we just take an aside here? Did you get the Meow Mix commercials during this whole thing?
Did I get the Meow Mix commercial?
Did Nelly see those? Because I got like 18 of them. And I'm like, Amy's dog must be losing her shit.
Yeah, and this. I get the Rachel Ray with the feeding of the dogs. The dogs are her audience. It's
not the Meow Mix, the animated cat singing in a band.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Amazon, why are you not letting us pay for this season?
Please, I'll pay any amount of money for it.
All right, so Jen, I wrote, thank God we don't have social media or this fight would be trending on Twitter and Charles would totally find out that Joe Gagne was fighting. Yep. Like, it's so weird to me that things could be done in secret.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have that world anymore.
Yeah. No.
So, all right. I'm going to read this exactly as I have it written. So the fight starts and Joe Kagan won't throw a punch. He only defends. Oh, wait, I'm lying. He's beating the shit out of his own kid. Then he knocks him out and he wins.
I have a couple questions here, though. Doesn't anyone recognize Joe Kagan? He was like a boxer on that circuit for 14 years. Not one person in the audience is like, hey, is that Joe Kagan
beating his own kid?
You know what I mean? I feel like they would see.
Maybe
someone would recognize him.
Maybe they were like, they'll be like, there's no way that he would be beating the shit out of his own kid.
No. I think someone would be like, is that Joe Kagan? Someone would definitely. And it's also clear that he's trained, like the way he's defending, the way he's moving. He's clearly so trained boxer, a man old enough to be his father. Kind of looks like him. I mean, let's assume that, like, they're actors, but, like, you know, like, he would have some resemblance to him.
Sure.
You know. And it's his dad's old manager, and this kid still hasn't put it together.
All right. So Sleazy ain't happy, and he dumps Tim Kagan, as agreed upon.
Well, and Joe makes sure that that happens, like, right in front of him.
Yep. So the next day, Jen, Joe Kagan's waiting for his train to Walnut Grove, and he sees.
He's not taking a train to Walnut Grove. He's taking a stagecoach to Walnut Grove.
But they're at a train station.
They're at a train station.
Even though they both get on stagecoaches.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was like a hub, like just like you get on a bus at the train station.
I almost said he sees Tim Kaine at the train station. He does not. He sees Tim Kagan.
Why is Tim Kaine in this episode? This is fucking stupid.
Tim Kaine has the personality of a piece of cardboard. He does not belong in this episode.
I was going to say a piece of sandpaper, but okay.
All right. So they start talking, and Tim Kagan says he's given up boxing because he can't even beat a farmer. He says he's going to go to his aunt's home in Denver and help her to run a store. Now, here's where I have a problem. Joe Kagan never reveals his identity to him. So I wrote, so let me get this straight. He hasn't seen his son for like 14 years. And when he does, he beats the shit out of him, takes away the only thing that he likes to do, then lets him leave town thinking a farmer kicked his ass and that his father never loved him or sent him money. What?
He makes a sacrifice. I think he makes a sacrifice because him showing up and like getting into his kid's life, I feel like might derail that kid.
Speaking strictly from a therapeutic point of view, this kid has severe anger and abandonment issues because he misinterpreted that his father, like he thinks his father abandoned him. That is not what happened.
Yeah. Right.
And this kid could benefit from knowing the truth.
Yeah, he could.
Come on, that's so stupid.
But let him go get his life set up and then go to Denver and talk to him. Like, it seems like the kid's in a pivotal point where he's making decisions about his life.
Look, you still encourage the kid to go to Denver.
Yeah.
But you just,
'cause that sounds like a better life for him than being on this boxing circuit.
But you just be like, here's what happened. Like, I never abandoned you.
Yeah.
Here's what happened.
I think Joe just thinks he's toxic for the kid. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what he thinks.
It's wrong because he's going to go to Walnut Grove and live like a nice little existence.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that yet.
Yeah, I just would never let this kid carry all that childhood trauma with them through life.
Well, Joe's
don't have
that insight. Yeah.
And that's
but
it.
What he does do is save the kid from a life of boxing with El Moody, which is a good thing.
He does, but he could have done that using his words.
He could have. Who knows? Like, he might have rebelled against him and been like, I can
grabbed Moody right in front when that interview was happening. No, here's what happened. Made Moody confess to all of it. You know, whatever.
But the kid is going to be angry to see him no matter what.
The kid's going to be angry, but I think the kid needs to know that he tried.
Yeah, but maybe the kid won't believe that.
I don't know. I just think letting that kid carry that trauma onto that stagecoach and go to Denver was a bad move.
But he seems to be making a good life for himself.
How do we know that?
Don't forget that he's going to be angry about him not coming back or the mother having to work. Like, no matter what, he's going to be angry about that.
Right, but I think he needs to have that conversation. Like, I'm a big believer
But it is Joe's fault.
I think there is a lot of benefit in having all the truth. And this kid deserves the truth, period.
But it's not going to absolve him. Like, it's still his fault. It's not.
And if he's still angry, fine.
Yeah.
But at least he will know he was not completely abandoned.
Right, right.
And then it was Moody's fault.
But it was really Joe's fault for picking boxing over his family.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
All right, Jen. So whose fault is this? Oh, we just did this.
No, I have something different.
Okay, whose fault is this?
It's probably unbridled 19th century capitalism and slavery. But to keep things simple, I'll go with the slimy manager. Although it was ultimately, because like, why did the mother have to work to the bone to support one child? Like, of, you know, because mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. course. But it's the slimy manager, but it's also Joe's fault. It's both of their fault.
Yeah, but you have to look at it from Joe's point of view. He was enslaved. He has zero education. Yeah. Boxing's the only thing he knew. That's the only way he knew how to make money. I mean, it's not like he was going to go farm somewhere. He didn't know how to farm. Charles had to teach him all that.
I mean, do you know how much manual labor there was at this time? Like, you could always get a job on the railroad or something.
I guess, yeah.
But the, you know, and I, like, would he naturally gravitate towards that? Or no, but when your family's like, I'm going to leave you, you figure it out.
Yeah, I guess. All right. At the end of every episode, Jenny and I look back and think about a theme or a lesson or some kind of scar that we took with us from either watching this in the original time during the 70s and 80s when we watched Little House, or on the rewatch. We call it our why. It's designed to finish the sentence, Gen X, this is why. So, Jenny, first let me ask you before you say your why. Did you remember this episode?
Kind of, sort of.
I did, too. Like,
I remember Joe Kagan, for sure.
Yeah, me too. Okay, Jenny, what is your why?
This is why you don't always want your kid to follow in your footsteps. Mm. Like for instance, when your kid, I don't have kids, but when your kids were leaning towards art, I was like, fun thing to do, go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you've done it, and not that it's not great, but, like, it's just a harder way to make a living.
Do you think Gen Xers do that? Is that common in Gen X?
I don't think as much as it was in earlier generations.
I don't think so, because I think we were really the first generation to go to college. All of us. Many of us. Like, on a large scale.
Yep.
We went to college, and many of our parents didn't. So I
but
think
like
we
some
had
people love
careers.
That, like when their kids do the same thing. And I guess it depends on what that thing is, right?
Like, I would be thrilled if one of my kids went to be a teacher.
Yeah.
That would really like warm my heart. I would like that.
Part of me is like, go learn to code, man. Just go learn to code.
There's no heart in that, really.
Is there not heart in that? No, it's science. I mean, it's the sciences.
I think that you and I come from completely different professional backgrounds, obviously. I am always in the helping position.
Are you saying that technology doesn't help people?
Technology absolutely helps people. But technology is, I feel,
just
more
helps
of a
billions
science.
Of people. It just helps billions of people instead of one.
It's more science-y. It's not a humanity.
It's 100% science.
Right.
It's literally science.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Was there a question?
No, I'm just saying, like, it's nothing like a helping profession. Which is more the humanities.
I mean, I'm more on the product and user experience side of things, which is a little different. It's more like it used to be called human and computer interaction. Mm. So like, what is that how does it affect lives? Like, what is the equity of it?
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely more on that side of, you know, I'm not writing code.
Okay. All right, Jenny, my why is this is why I hate boxing, fighting, or any sport with violence. Boxing should be outlawed. I hate UFC, MMA, all of it. Hate it, hate it, hate it. I don't even think it should be allowed.
I love it.
Nope. Look at what is happening to these people.
What's the difference? Like, the same thing happens to football players. Nobody has a problem with it.
And I have a real problem with it. Now, did I always? No. But once all of this started to come out, I can't even watch it. When you go to a high school football game and you hear those helmets cracking, you can't. I can't even go there. Can't even go.
I mean, it's not. This is not a Joe Kagan situation. No one was forced into these things. They pick this life because they like it.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of exploitation that happens.
Probably
a lot of it.
But that, I mean, but that's a different problem than it existing.
I can't watch it. The UFC, like I have friends who are like, if you guys like UFC, fine. Good on you.
UFC.
Watch UFC. But I have friends who are like, oh, are we going to watch the fight? Nope. I'll come over and watch Dead Poets Society. Not watching the fight.
It's a skill. It's a sport. Like it's. Mm-mm. Okay.
Nope. Can't watch it. Can't watch war movies. Can't watch fighting. No.
I mean, war movies are really different.
I can't watch people getting hurt. It hurts me. It bothers me.
Even if it's like sport, no one's gonna die. Like war is like people are gonna die. That's a whole.
I'm the definition of a snowflake.
Like a sporting event is different. There's, you know, there's regulation around it. There's safety around it.
I remember watching Rocky when we were smaller, and I loved the Rocky movies.
Okay, that's boxing.
But I remember saying to mom at one point, "I wish these movies didn't have the fighting in them."
It's literally about. This is like when you want a Karate Kid to not be about karate.
Like, I wish that you had the human story up to the fight and they just went to the end of the fight then. Like, oh, here's what happened at the fight. You didn't have to see it.
You seem to like Karate Kid or Cobra Kai. You seem to love Cobra Kai.
I love Cobra Kai.
Well, there you go.
Cobra Kai is not as dark. Those kids don't seem to really get hurt from the fighting.
No, they don't. We talked about that. There's no blood. Come on. Yeah. He just took eight punches to the nose. That shit's going
to
bleed.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to really examine my relationship with televised violence.
It's not unlike when I was in karate, you get minor injuries. Like you get injured. Like it, but that's not unlike, like I know people who play rugby who get way more injured than I ever got injured in karate.
I think it's just what bothers me is what we know about the head trauma.
Sure.
Why are we still doing this to people?
But that's most of the sport. You're not punching people in the head, except boxing.
Boxing, yeah. Which is what my card's about, or my why is about. Boxing.
Well, you lumped a bunch of shit in there.
I did. I said fighting, or I said any sport with extreme violence. Yes.
Like wrestling, you're not punching somebody in the head?
I wouldn't watch wrestling because I just wouldn't because it's boring, but...
Wrestling, real wrestling is not boring. Mm. Like WWE or whatever it is now.
Oh, that bullshit?
That's bullshit. That's a show. That's bullshit. Yeah. But like actual wrestling is pretty crazy.
But I have even seen documentaries about the WWE and those people sustain a ton of injuries.
Well, they're basically stuntmen.
Yeah, they live really shitty lives and
they're basically stuntmen.
Shocker, WWE does nothing to pay them benefits or support them. So,
but that like fighters don't consider that sport. It's right. Entertainment.
Right.
It's like performance.
Yes.
Like it's like Jackie Chan's like dudes that do, I mean, they're much better, but they do all these crazy stunts and like insurance companies won't even insure them. Like it's
Jenny,
it's stunt.
When we were growing up in WrestleMania and the WWF was big and everything, who was your favorite fighter?
You liked the Ultimate Warrior.
I did too. He was
I liked him and I liked, what was the other one?
Jake the Snake, I liked.
Rampage was much later, and he's UFC. It was who was the dude they brought out in the cage?
Oh, The Undertaker?
No.
I don't know.
I liked Jake the Snake, too.
I like Jake the Snake. I like Roddy Piper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never a big fan of Hulk Hogan.
I liked Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
He was just in, like, that crazy mask. It was funny because I follow The Rock on Instagram. I love The Rock.
Okay. No comment.
He posted, it was like Andre the Giant's birthday or something. I don't know. And he posted pictures of him when he was a kid with Andre the Giant.
Oh, cool.
And it was weird because he was like a huge kid. I mean, he was like a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like a 4-year-old stand next to this guy.
That's cool. That's cool. All right, Jenny. So why don't you tell our audience what we have coming up next? And guys, by the way, usually this is the point in the episode where I read some reviews. We have none.
Uh-oh.
If you love us, leave us a 5-star review and tell us why. If you hate please us, keep on scrolling.
Please do, because every day Amy looks at the review page and every day she's disappointed. And I have to keep hearing about it.
Yeah.
So the next episode is going to be Season 4, Episode 11, Meet Me at the Fair.
This sounds familiar to me.
You know what one this is.
Is this the one with the quote-unquote fat lady?
No, that's Nell's sister.
Okay. I don't like that episode. That's going to be very hard for me to watch. What is this one?
This is the one where Carrie floats away in the balloon.
Oh, God. Yes, I know this one so well.
I'll read the description. Oh. The Ingalls and Olsen family spend a fun-filled and exciting day at a county fair. Sparks fly between Mary and a smooth-talking balloonist. All right, Mary. Wow, she picks the worst dudes. Carolyn and Harriet face off in a pie-baking contest.
Oh,
please. And Charles and Nels enter a gritty competition of their own. Laura wastes all her money in a surprising way. Not surprising. And Carrie faces serious danger when Laura fails to supervise her.
Well, Laura is not trained as a big sister.
No, she's not. So you're right.
I want to defend her right there.
Right. She's not.
Okay. That's like when I brought my kids home and I didn't know I had to bathe them because I didn't know how to take care of children.
Laura, what do you mean you didn't know you had to bathe them?
The first 3 or 4 days they're home, Timmy's mom called. She's like, oh, how are the girls? Did they get their first bath? I'm like, oh, fuck, a bath. Jenny, you have to remember so much shit in those first days.
Cleaning them is not like, it's kind of like food, sleep.
First of all, you're not sleeping. Second of all, you have this list of shit you have to remember.
Well, I'm just writing the list of like our fundamental necessities, which is eat, sleep, water, bathe.
Okay, I'm done. All right, guys.
I would know to clean them.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. And we'll see you soon. Hi, everyone. Amy here. If you'd like to support our podcast, please consider leaving us a review wherever you listen. To send us an email or connect with us on social, please visit us at genxthisiswhy.com. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.